Welcome to another edition of the Men of 8 Gang Podcast, episode 117, recorded on April Fool's Day. We're not going to go there. This is Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Yes, and I tweeted the biggest April Fool's joke is it was 80 degrees in Minneapolis last year. For real.
For real?
Not today.
Okay. And Phil Wilson.
And it's my birthday today, so let the jokes fly.
You're kidding.
Let the jokes fly.
Is it serious? You were born on April Fool's Day? No wonder.
Of course,
that explains everything.
Of course, my whole elementary school life, nobody believed me, of course. So I got very few presents. Scarred me. Really scarred me deeply.
I'm sorry.
Now it all comes together.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, it's, I got to tell you that, you know, Julio from the Pioneer Press did a whole recap of April Fool's jokes and TechCrunch has got something and so on. And I've really come to the realization geeks are just not funny. I mean, they're just, there's just no humor there. It's like, what? Come on.
You mean the practical jokes?
Just
quote-unquote practical jokes online and phony blog posts and things like that. Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, but stuff like Richard Branson declaring that he's bought Pluto and is going to reinstate it as a planet. Now, that's pretty funny.
That's pretty good stuff. And it's going to take Richard Branson to reinstate it as a planet.
That's right.
And it'll be a big old Virgin logo on it.
He's got that space initiative.
Why not?
It's publicity for his space initiative.
Yep. Oh, man. Well, so last week we did our podcast at the Overnight Website Challenge, but Tim, we left before it started to smell in there and before it got really ugly. Can you just give us a recap of what happened after we left? And, you know, we were there when Senator Al Franken was there, which was a lot of fun.
And I'm sure he'll remember us.
Of course. Yeah. Well, isn't he a listener to the podcast?
Sure.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure,
sure
he is.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. Well, anyway.
He and that other guy.
Which other guy?
But the other guy that listens.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, what happened? How did it end? How did it end up? Did all the clients stay like yours did through the whole thing?
I wasn't looking at the other teams at all, so I assume so. Project 514 or 515, they had people that kind of volunteered to come in and join us throughout the night too.
Oh, really?
So we had company all the way until about 4 a.m, I think, or three or four in the morning. And the executive director, she stayed through the entire challenge. So, and that was very helpful near the end when we were, you know, finishing the content migration, doing the final work on the design. Mm-hmm. And getting ready for the judge's presentation.
Because you could just run stuff by her.
Yeah, we were sitting there going through page by page, making sure that the content was right. We got some stock photography and put that in and really kind of took the site to another level. Yep. But it was still, you know, you think that the first year we learned an awful lot and we said, we're going to do this differently. We're going to be more organized. We're going to get done by midnight. And of course, midnight comes and that doesn't happen. And so then you think, well, we're going to get done by 2, and you're not done by 2. We were pretty much done by 6 in the morning.
Oh, man.
Good for you.
Which is better
than where we were last year.
Right. You know. We were still tweaking it, don't get me wrong, but it was pretty much the way it was when we presented it. So at 7, we presented to the judges, and that went pretty well. And they seemed impressed with some of the features we built in. We did some integration work. We actually developed, I think, 3
plugins.
Developed 4 WordPress plugins.
So you dropped there for a second. Sorry.
Yeah. No. We developed them for the integration of their CRM system, which is. I forgot the name of it, but it's got a Salsa. That's what it is. So we developed plugins for that, so that basically that functionality would be incorporated with the website. You wouldn't have to go to their website.
Yep.
We also did some for an SMS service, so they could do SMS marketing.
You know, if I can interject, was the quality of the teams different than last year? And I don't mean quality of human beings, but what I saw with your team, for instance, was significantly beefier in terms of coders and UI people, and just a really interesting mix. Lack of tall, goofy guy. Named
yeah,
Phil.
No, we went after when we said we're going to do it again. We said we need more design folks. So that we made a conscious effort to recruit some designers, and we brought three of them in.
And the strategy worked because you moved into the top four.
Yeah,
you were a finalist this year.
Well, so. I think the judges are looking for a couple things. One, they're looking for the site to be finished during the challenge. Not necessarily ready to push live, but in a working manner that you could push it live shortly after.
They're also
looking at design. I think design and UI has a lot to do with it. And they seemed impressed that we did some things with data that were kind of unexpected, like the 515 statutes. We built a post type so that you can input those, and then a sidebar widget that presents those a different one each time you reload the page. So that's throughout the entire site, and that seemed to impress them. But we wanted to surface all of that data.
Yeah.
And we developed a custom theme from the ground up too, which I think helped.
Well, so let me ask you something. Steve and I were talking about this the other day, and I wanted to find out. Do you not believe that you should have? Shouldn't one of the rules of the website challenge be something that goes live? It has to go live at the end of the challenge. Don't you think that really would really bring home the fact that this is a overnight website challenge? Because it's not really a site or a website until it's actually on the web, right?
Yeah, no, I think that just about everybody could have put their sites on the web. So. And I don't think that having that requirement's practical, because in our case, even though we could have, done it, the nonprofit didn't want to move it at that time.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
They had other things going on. So,
well, and I'm not just saying
forcing that. Forcing that would be a problem. I guess if they made that a condition.
I mean, I think that, to me, that really brings the challenge home, is that this sucker's got to be up in 24 hours.
Yeah.
But
maybe they'll do that.
Who am I to say? Because it's a very successful event and does put together a lot of great sites for a lot of great nonprofits. So
yeah, 18 well, this year, and there were a good number of them that did push during the event, including the winners. Mm-hmm. They were live. They were actually live, I think, at 3 or 4 in the morning.
Well, they built that. Didn't they build that on the Engine platform?
Yeah.
It wasn't a ground up site. It was built on Engine.
Right. It's a very, very nice CMS.
Very robust.
When I went through it, having enterprise content management experience all the way down to open source stuff like WordPress and Drupal, the engine is really well done. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's phenomenal. But
if you're not familiar with Engine, it's from TST Media.
TST Media. Yeah. They're really accelerating too in terms of the number of and types of sites that they're doing. But here's a question for you, Tim, because it's I've been thinking about this a lot, that Engine isn't mobile ready. So while you can look at the site through an iPhone and through an iPad, usually is just fine with any site, for the most part, if it's not Flash, but how many of the teams were looking at these sites to communicate, which is what it's all about. So the nonprofit can take donations and engage with their constituents and so on. How many of them were doing what you guys were doing, which was putting in mobile capability?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. None of the finalists really talked much about mobile.
Did you guys?
We didn't talk about it. No, we did build it in. So, and it will be, when it launches, it will have that capability. but no one else really mentioned it. So, you know, that's a good point. We did think mobile, though, from the beginning, and that's why we went down the SMS road.
Yeah.
So hey, listen, we wanted to build that in as an additional layer.
Very yep. cool.
See, I don't mean to just cut you off there, bud, but Derek Williams just pinged us. That was that
sorry about that
calling. And just to kind of set this up real quickly, there is... as we all know, a significant shift in journalism overall. And the thing that really hit me, knowing that we were going to have Derek on this week, was that Zeit copyright infringement cease and desist, where the Washington Post, Dow Jones, Time Inc., and other news organizations essentially are really against Flipboard and Zeit and others repackaging and redisplaying their RSS feeds. Even though you can do that through Google Reader and so on, this makes it accessible to the to the masses. Thank you very much.
Well done.
Doesn't that go against the idea of RSS?
Of course it does. Well, we all know that.
It's syndication. That if you don't want your stuff to get out there like that, then don't provide it on a feed.
But then you're not in the game. So that's the push-pull.
I agree. But yeah. I mean, if it's crazy that people think that they can, you know, put it freely out. And then sue someone that they just don't like, you know.
Yeah, but if somebody is aggregating data that comes from you and they're profiting on it, shouldn't you get a piece of that profit?
Well, why am I, if I'm publishing it for free on an RSS feed, why should I expect that?
Yeah.
Because if you're providing it for free and then somebody comes along and aggregates your data and charges for it.
Uh-huh.
That's nuts. Why shouldn't you be compensated?
But actually, Zeit is
nice,
not.
But yeah. I wouldn't expect that, though. It's freely available on the internet.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't mind if somebody resold your data or your
I get perturbed when I get reaggregated on other sites, mostly spam sites, but there's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, the other thing is Zeit isn't even making any money.
Yet.
So it's on the expectation that they will make money.
Yeah.
I mean, the damn app just came out.
Yeah, well, the expectation.
They're trying to snuff it in its early days, you know.
Well, kill it in the crib.
How is that different from Flipboard?
Well, it's not.
Well, I like it a lot better, but it's a similar kind of a thing. But I just like the way it learns what you want. And you know, they have a UI for that. So you click on, are you guys all using it on the iPad yet?
Or? Yeah. Yeah. I'm using both of them.
Yeah. Well, if I had an iPad, yeah, I'd probably be using it.
If you did, you would. Trust me. You would love this app. I'm so loving it. I can't believe it. I use Flipboard a whole lot less now.
Well, let's do this. Let's bring in Derek Williams from Patch and talk to him about the Patch model, but also what he's doing with it in Lakeville for local news. And he may have some interesting opinions on this because
I'm guessing
they do a little aggregation, a little curation of content themselves.
Morning, Derek.
Good morning. Happy April Fool's Day.
Hello,
thank you,
Derek.
So much. Yeah, Derek, I met Derek in Lakeville where he runs Lakeville Patch. So, you know, Tim and I get our news from Derek.
Because you live there. You live in Lakeville.
Where we live. So.
That's right, yeah.
How's it going, brother?
It's going well, man. I mean, it's cloudy outside. Twin start today. I can't complain.
How bad can that be, right?
It can be really bad when you don't have cable and you can't and you can't see a game.
Well, they only had, what, 12, 13 games on WFTC or whatever it is over there.
Yeah.
But no, as for Patch, things are going swimmingly.
Can you give us kind of a quick download of the AOL's endeavor here with Patch and then how you got involved and get a little bit about your background?
Sure. Well, I'll start with my background, actually. I'm a former editor for This Week Newspapers, which is just kind of a local newspaper chain here in the South Metro. So if you're not in the South Metro, think ABC Newspapers up north, the Lily News in St. Paul, things like that. You know, specializing in local news coverage from school boards and city councils to high school sports and all that kind of stuff. AOL... they wanted to kind of get into the news business a little bit, and more than they already were. And, you know, they were really good at things like, you know, pop culture news and, you know, who's dating who on the celebrity circuit and that kind of stuff. But they wanted to get kind of a meatier presence in the news markets. And rather than copy the Google and Yahoo competitors of the world, they went local. And they decided to snatch up a company from Google called Patch. And basically what Patch is it's an online local newspaper. It's probably the easiest way for folks to understand it. And it started on the East Coast, and it was brought by AOL's new CEO, Tim Armstrong. Mm-hmm. He kind of discovered it one day. He wanted to do some volunteer work, actually, in his community, and he couldn't find out a single way to do it. And then he stumbled across Patch. And one of the key parts of Patch is that we're kind of high on the whole volunteering thing. And so we have something called Give 5 days a year. I get paid to volunteer from my company. So I can go into the community, whether it be 360 communities or whatever, and give a day, volunteer, kind of help the community in any way I see fit. And beyond news, that's kind of our other spoke or tent pole, I guess you could say, that we really want to be a part of the community. It's in a lot of ways, we're more than just a news provider. We're part of the community too.
So when I'm looking at the site, which I am right now, and I see Monday, March 21st, Garofalo-led omnibus education bill doesn't cut school funding, but reductions could come elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And you penned that. How do you generate this content? How do you obtain it? Are you aggregating and curating content from other sources? How are you driving the content on here? And I'll have a second question about that as well.
Sure. Well, I generate the content kind of the old-fashioned way that I always have, and that's you know, being in the community. I hear a lot of things. You know, I go to the meetings. If there's somebody interesting in the town doing something, yep. I do my best to cover it. I also use a lot of freelancers. You know, there's so much news that I can get to. There's only so much news that I can get to that to cover the community really well and to get a lot of the news up that I want to get up, I need to use freelancers. So, I mean, if you go to page right now, lakeville.patch.com, I just updated three things this morning, and all three of them are by three different freelancers that I have. A guy named Joel Fredrickson, another named Troy Thompson, another named Brooke Walsh. And, we have freelance budgets. We call them editorial budgets. Each patch, we have 20 in Minnesota. Lakeville's just one of them. And each local editor is free to spend what, you know, out of their freelance and their editorial budget to kind of get some of that content that you're talking about. Now, that being said, I'm putting a little bit more emphasis than the local newspapers are able to on some things like legislative coverage. Something that I run every week is called Capitol Review. And I actually go and kind of dive in and look at what Senator Thompson and Representatives Holberg and Garofalo here locally in Lakeville mm-hmm. are doing in this session. And so I try and break down state issues like the omnibus education bill. I try as best I can to break it down locally. What does it mean necessarily for Lakeville? Or in the case of Senator Thompson earlier this year, he authored a pretty controversial piece of legislation that would make it impossible for teachers to get raises for 2 years, and then they couldn't strike if they wanted. And it kind of ruffled a few feathers here.
Yeah, I can imagine.
You know, and there isn't, I mean, the local angle to that is sort of obvious. But I guess from a local news perspective, you know, having Lakeville's state senator author something like that is newsworthy unto itself.
Yeah. Well, so here was the second sort of follow-up question, because it's all the conversations that I get in with people about, you know, is journalism dead? Is journalism morphing into something else.
You're always talking about journalism. Journalism will not die. It just changes.
It will just change. And the biggest concern that I've had for, I don't know, several years now has been the issue of investigative journalism being in jeopardy.
Sure.
And so I'll just give you one local example, and I'd be interested in how you go about addressing this. In Eden Prairie, we have Flying Cloud Airport. The runway's been extended, and there's all kinds of issues because of corporate jet aircraft. And now there's a move afoot to change the agreement that the city did with the Metropolitan Airports Commission and extend it to a Type 2 aircraft runway, which would, of course, allow much, much heavier aircraft to land there. And as a consequence, there's been a lot of people that are up in arms about it in neighborhood groups and community groups, but there isn't anyone who has done any kind of a coordinated, orchestrated effort to go and really dig into the story and spend the time necessary to understand all the subtleties and nuances, understand the legal aspects and all of that. And I know that I have felt many times that, you know, geez, I really should do that, but I don't have the time to do that. Even if I was a contributor to EdenPrairie.patch.com, I wouldn't be able to do that. So how do you, if there's like some looming thing, like they're going to put a landfill in the middle of Lakeville right next to Phil's house.
You mean another one?
Another one. That's right. and you caught wind of that. How would you go about doing investigative journalism around that? Would you rally your contributors to go after that? And if so, are they even capable of that? Sure. How would you address that?
Well, I guess I'd probably do it myself.
Yeah.
I mean that, and it's honest, but kind of a joke too. What I would do is I'd probably tap, I guess in the situation that I have now in this life with Patch being kind of the only, you know, I'm a one-man show technically. You know, I'm the only full-time guy in Lakeville that's paid by Patch.
Yep.
I would try and handle the story on my own, and I would probably try and give off all of the other news coverage for the city for a week, 3 days, 4 days, however long it takes to do a good job on that kind of story. I'd give them the reins for the other stuff. That's not only a situation for maybe online journalists and things like that, but that speaks to the same kind of issues that local journalism has had probably forever. Local newspapers, local online newspapers and all those kinds of things, they have very limited resources when compared to, you know, larger Pioneer Presses and Star Tribunes
right.
and stuff like that of the world.
Right.
And there you're right. There's a finite amount of time that one local editor can devote to a story without giving up coverage to everything else. And, you know, we try and do our best. I think that online journalism, such as Patch, are probably better off than some of the local newspapers of the world, simply because we're a little bit quicker and we can do more.
Yeah. Yep.
Hey, Derek, this is Graham. I've got a question for you. How do you pay your freelancers? Is it, you said you have a freelance budget. Is it per story or per word, or what do you do?
We pay competitively per story.
Okay.
Using the fancy schmancy internet, you know, we require all of our freelancers to have PayPal accounts, because it's most convenient for them, they say, to be paid electronically. So I literally will pay freelancers, you know, in a 1 or 2 day turnaround via PayPal, rather than waiting, you know, to send off a contractor's account to a corporate office.
Right.
They have to prove it. Holding time, you know, you're talking 10, 15 days before our freelancers might be able to get their payments. It's not like that.
Well, that's great. Are you looking primarily for people that have newspaper reporting experience, I would assume?
At first I was, but I mean, honestly, the one thing that I try to do as much as I can is to try and have the contributors that I have for Lakeville Patch be a part of the community. You know, I don't want people that live in, you know, Elk River for example, attributing to Lakeville Patch because they just simply don't know enough about the community, or they're not close enough to the community.
How about journalism students? Does that come into play? I know there's a lot of hungry journalism grads or seniors out there that are trying to get experience. Do they find you?
Yeah, I've had specifically with my sports coverage, some of my high school sports coverage. I had a guy named Reese Lampa. He's a University of Minnesota journalism student. Was doing stuff for the Minnesota Daily. Lives in Lakeville, and you know, I was sending to a lot of game here in Lakeville, between Lakeville North, Lakeville South, things like that. You know, he was getting paid. He was getting experience. He was getting the clips that he wanted. And he was a great asset. He still is, actually. He hasn't gone anywhere.
So you guys have you guys have sports teams in Lakeville?
Yes, we do.
Well, high school sports.
A lot of
some good ones.
We are just kidding. By just the way, I might.
I'm sorry. Lost my head.
But that's great that you're able to get the students involved. You know, I mean, this whole patch network has got to be a real invigorating thing for the journalism community, you know, the journalism schools around the country.
Well, listen, Derek, tell me a little bit about something. You know, we've talked about this. You know, how I met Derek was actually at a school board meeting, and he was we were both commenting on the enthusiasm and excitement of the meeting, as it were, or lack thereof. But anyway, it brought to mind that, you know, when I was doing broadcast, you know, coming up in the 80s and 90s, part of the gig of a local station was to have somebody go to the, you know, the school board meetings and the city council meetings and that sort of thing. And Derek is doing that. Derek, how does that translate to, popularity? Do you get a lot of people? Attract a lot of people to the site for those things, or what do you find is really drawing people to Patch?
Well, I don't think it's a fair question at this point because the Lakeville School Board is doing all the attraction to Lakeville Patch that I need. and what I mean is I officially launched on December 13th, and less than 2 weeks later, the school board started their $15.8 million in budget cuts and the closing of schools and teachers. And now we've got the superintendent resigning and getting
not resigning.
Or, well, you know, retiring.
Retiring. Because if you resign, but you can't draw on your pension. If you retire, you can't get your pension.
Yes, he's retiring. He's retiring for public education, and he's going to a nonprofit professional guild to lead that, and essentially is getting about $360,000 in benefits and compensation to do it, despite his likely large paycheck that he's going to get from them. But I guess my point is that
not that you've checked or anything.
Not that I have checked, and they won't give it to me.
Ah, there you go.
They don't have to, and they don't.
No, I mean you checked on the public stuff though. Good
Yes. And
$360,000, you say.
Yeah, well, $91,000 in severance, another $91,000 roughly in sick pay that he's banked over his 10 years in Lakeville, and then his dental and medical coverage over the next 10 years should come to about $180 million or whatever the difference is.
May we talk about the cuts in Lakeville programs? Because we've had a lot of them. As Derek said, 15 point. What?
Well, the end result
gave
of
a whole
that,
new meaning to the word hackathon.
So. Yes. Yeah. The end result is a school closed, 80 teachers gone, fees increased in some cases 50 to 100%, and a whole bunch of programs, including fifth grade band, all of the elementary art teachers, physical education, health, all reduced. There's a whole bunch more, and all of that combined, that whole big news story, has driven a lot of folks to Lakeville Patch. Not only because I think I covered it well, but also because I covered it immediately. And that's something that the Star Tribunes and especially the This Week newspapers aren't able to do.
Yeah.
Or I should say they choose not to. They focus on their print product and not their online product, whereas I only have an online product.
Well, I just got.
How, Go ahead.
Geez, we're all eager to ask questions. No, I just wanted to ask you, Derek, because we obviously have a tech audience that I'm curious about the technology, about the system that underlies this. And are you, as the editor, able to go in and select content to feed this, or is 100% of it stuff that you generate locally?
Close to 100% of it is stuff that I generate locally.
Okay.
If you look at the website, you might have seen a lot of things like Bites Nearby is, for example, is a little article that we do. And some of those things we do regionally. And the reason that we do them at all is because AOL has noticed that there are certain segments of the population that read Patch more than others. And it would be silly for us not to try and maybe cater to those audiences a little bit with information that is hopefully relevant to everybody. You know, we're not doing, you know, super laser guided programming for anybody.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the Bites Nearby, we have something in Lakeville here. I have something called a Moms Council. I literally meet with five or six moms once a month and kind of get their opinion on various issues that are they're facing parents in the community. And it's information that you might not necessarily be able to get anywhere else online. And it has a local relevance because it's from local folks. And it's those kinds of things. And those are generated company-wide. You know, it's kind of a thing where AOL said, hey, guys, do this. Try and focus on this in addition to whatever else you're doing. And it's honestly doesn't take a lot of my time. My focus still is, you know, the school board meetings and the city council meetings and the Charlie Sheen interns and all those different things that I've managed to draw up for stories.
So, Derek, I noticed that if I look at the communities that have Patch, Eden Prairie is not one of them where Steve lives. So I was
just
wondering.
Or Bloomington isn't either, which shocks me.
We have telegraphs. So
I was wondering how the Patch folks choose a community to cover.
It's fairly simple. We the corporate office folks, the model is less than 100,000 people. We're trying to stay out of the large cities, and that doesn't necessarily preclude all towns. We are running experiments in, say, we have a Southwest Minneapolis patch where we're trying to see if neighborhoods deserve, you know, their own local news content. But we're trying to stay out of the large metropolitan areas simply because they're not necessarily underserved when it comes to local news.
So Bloomington, even though it's less than 100,000 population, last I checked, is too close in as a close in suburb to make the cut, maybe, huh?
Sure. Well, not necessarily. I know that, you know, like we're not done launching patches, to be perfectly honest. This last week, our first quarter here, we launched something called Lake Minnetonka Patch and Burnsville. Burnsville came online earlier this week, and so did Lake Minnetonka, where, you know, we're still growing in the state, still growing nationally. And, you know, we're going to be looking at towns around metropolitan areas, or maybe not necessarily around metropolitan areas, but we feel are underserved by their local news producers, whether it be newspapers or what have you.
Derek, we're a little bit almost out of time here, but I wanted to just as a sort of a segue, you and I had talked a little bit about the impact of online journalism as opposed to print journalism, and as it pertains to small town weeklies. Can you give me your thoughts on the impact that the internet is having on small town weeklies? And you had shared some numbers with me or some thoughts with me about what could impact a lot of small town print publications. And can you share a little bit more just as a point of sort of wrapping this up? How is it changing print journalism?
Well, the internet is, you would like to think, would enhance print journalism, but unfortunately it's so multifaceted. The problems that the internet causes for print media, I'm scared for print media. It's a combination of folks can go online immediately to get news. It's a combination of businesses are realizing that they can advertise on Facebook online for free or for pennies on the dollar that they would spend for advertising, display advertising in a newspaper. And it's, I think the biggest thing is the overhead cost to produce news online is a fraction of what it costs to produce news in a newspaper. You know, Lakeville Patch doesn't have delivery trucks. We don't have to buy bulk paper, bulk ink, and we don't have to run a printing press and all of those kinds of things. And print does. And so a company like Patch, like AOL, that focuses a lot of their content online, we just don't need the dollars to produce the same amount of content that print does.
Do you see now anybody anybody in the dailies or the weekly world that you have operated in for years making a concerted effort to move to transition to online or to enhance their product with online? Are you just seeing, you know, they're staying with the print model that they know?
They're staying with the print model they know because it at this point it does still pay the bills. Okay. The problem is that it's not going to forever. When the economy kind of tanked. Well, kind of is a generous
word.
What
do you think? But, yeah.
A lot of advertisers fled print. And the only reason that print was necessarily saved was because of the real estate market tanking. Every time a foreclosure occurs, the county is forced by state statute to publish a legal notice saying that this property is foreclosed on, they're going to be a sheriff sale, yada, yada, yada. Well, newspapers are getting revenue from that. And a lot of newspapers, especially the local community newspapers that, you know, we all grew up learning about what was happening on our school boards and city councils. When that goes away and the advertisers don't come back, are going to face humongous financial issues. You can see it here in the Southern Metro with This Week newspapers. They operate a business publication called Dakota County Business Weekly, Dakota County Tribune Business Weekly, something along those lines. It's like a 44-page publication with about 10 pages of news. The other 30 pages are all legal advertisements. Mm. And they're generating millions and millions of dollars. And the rub is that either that money is going to dry up when the foreclosure markets or the foreclosures stop occurring, or there's currently a bill in the House and the Senate at the Minnesota legislature that would stop forcing counties and city governments to pay for legal advertisements. They could put their legal advertisements up on their website or another website for free. Wow. And if that occurs, that's millions of dollars in local ad revenue that just disappear instantaneously.
Well, you know, on top of that, Derek, I met yesterday morning with Joseph Reuter, who was at this Mobile 3D for Mobile March, showing an app called Locate My Deal, which mm-hmm. essentially aggregates Groupon, Living Social, all these others. And based on where you are geographically, you can see all the deals around you, including circulars.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And so the circular piece obviously is just not quite there yet. But when I look at the Strib, for example, the Star Tribune, and I see the page and a half, if that, of classifieds, and then it's packed with circulars. And I say, man, if the circular business is disrupted, to your point, that's gonna pull the rug out from underneath them.
Yeah, yeah, and the numbers, the first quarter numbers for the Star Tribune, for example, are down. Mm-hmm. I just read on MinPost's Brow blog, David Brower. He's kind of the media junkie here in town. And he's reported that the Star Tribune's first quarter numbers are down in part because of circular advertising being exactly. down nationally, which is, you know, kind of goes to your point. And, you know, it's scary. And a lot of people don't know that local journalism, with the exception of online journalism, there's a lot of, you know, local bloggers out there that care enough about their communities to kind of do it on their own in a lot of cases. But if there is a perfect storm out there, and if it occurs, local newspapers, as you know them, could disappear overnight.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Literally, well, and yeah. it's scary.
Well, listen, Derek, let's wrap up and say thank you very much.
Yeah, thank
for you.
You
joining us. Keep up the great work at Lakeville Patch. I think that at least for Tim and I, is obviously talking to you, it's something that we both like. I know that we both like that personalization of you know, what's going on in my town. I mean, I can take a look at the front page here and see two or three people I know. So I think it's great. Just keep up the great work, and we'll catch up with you and see how things go, and you know, after a year, and see how that how everything's yeah. moving on for you. Okay.
And Phil just slipped me a note that said more stories on Phil and Tim.
I'll do my best.
Thanks, Derek.
Thanks, Derek.
You're the best.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Take care, man.
All right, man.
See ya.
Well.
Yeah.
That's what I tell you, it's
Exciting and scary at the same
well,
time.
Well, it is, really is, but you know, I look at Eden Prairie, and we have a large Somali community in Eden Prairie, and the representation was yanked at the city level, and I kept thinking about the missed opportunity for the Star Tribune to do sort of this parent-child model where they'd have their main parent site, and then they'd have every municipality around the Twin Cities with a local just mm-hmm. like Lakeville.patch, and they'd have the ability to push ads out, they'd have ability to do a Craigslist model, they'd have the ability to have all of these correspondents and contributors contributing mm-hmm. to the content base, but it would be local, and there could be a Somali representative that would do just Somali news on a section, and it just seems like such a huge missed opportunity. So it's nice to see them doing that. I just wish that it was homegrown in mm-hmm. Minnesota.
Well, it's nice to see that. It's nice to hear that. And I always come back to this: that writers are being compensated by Patch.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, obviously, I'm sure they wouldn't turn away. You know, people volunteering their time, contributing,
contributed content, right?
But at yeah. the same time, it's nice that they want to keep paying journalists. Because look, you and I could go out and do an article on something because we're passionate about it, but that doesn't mean we're going to go out and do it again tomorrow because we're not making any money at it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's nice to get that compensated. And Derek mentioned the Strib, and David Brower did do a piece on, and we'll put it in the show notes, to do a piece on the new Star Tribune site that's coming out, which
yeah,
is supposed, to debut next week. So they've cleaned things up. They've cut down on the amount of advertising. Now, is that because they don't have the amount of advertising, or do they realize that that drives people away from websites? It's hard to say. But I also noted that MinnPost, in their annual report at the end of last year, this is the first year that MinnPost has actually made money. It's not a lot of money. It's like $17,000 on millions of spent. But still, I mean, they've broken even for after 3 or 4 years.
So. Well, here's what I thought was so fascinating. So last spring, the Newspaper National Network, which is an association of newspapers, found the number of unique visitors to U.S. newspapers' websites are at an all-time high. From March to April of 2010, the top 25 markets grew 10%, blah, blah, blah. And yet, and Ed Kohler, you know, the tech evangelist guy here locally, pointed this out in a blog post at thedeets.com, that if you leave the Strib's website open, as many other newspaper sites, it just continually refreshes itself. So it's on a timer, and every one of those refreshes, of course, displays new ads, and that's a page view. So if you inadvertently leave it open in a tab, because you're going to refer to it later, as long as your computer's running, you're going to have refresh after refresh after refresh. And so how accurate are those numbers? Are they in fact real, or is everybody jumping on the refresh bandwagon? And right. Let's just shrink the cycle time of our refreshes. We'll get more pages.
Well, it kind of comes back to that old pass-around number that the newspaper used to use for their advertisers, saying, you know, well, yes, we only sell 100,000 newspapers, but those get passed to three other people.
Sure.
So we really have a circulation of 300,000. That's over a quarter million.
That's right.
You want to advertise with us. And it's like, okay, could you prove that for me, please?
Well, I don't know. In the show notes here, who put this in, Tim or Graham, about MinnPost's annual report that 2010 was their first break-even year. That's
me.
A big deal.
That is
was
a
you?
Big deal. That is a big. Yeah, I just talked about it. You never listen to me.
I'm sorry.
Yes,
it'll never happen
yes,
again.
It's the Joel's report about the year in past,
yeah.
and he
yeah.
yeah they've made money. Not a great deal of money, but they broke even, and that's after 3 years or 2 years of losing money.
Yeah.
The other thing I've never been clear on about MinnPost is how much of the contributors are paid versus just volunteer contributors. You know, I have no idea how big their staff is.
Well, I don't know the latest
and I don't know the level of compensation.
So. Yeah, but they have a core staff, and then they have core journalists like David Brower, and then they have contributors. You know, Minnovate, we contributed for how long? 2 years? and just cross posted. And they have a lot
Steve
of others.
And Steve was pocketing all that money.
That's right.
Never
gave
us a dime.
The perks were incredible.
Yeah, right. That and $3 will get you a cup of coffee anywhere.
Exactly. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Well, so it was fun though.
Yeah,
it was
great. Yeah.
Well, only because it's the model of nonprofit, citizen driven, or public driven content. I get back to that investigative journalism thing, which is, I don't want to see that go away.
Yeah.
You know, when the next Watergate happens, it'd be nice to have somebody that can dig into that. And
are you guys concerned that MinPost started making money after we stopped contributing?
I would argue that we helped build that up to that level. Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah. All right. Well, we gotta wrap up here,
but yeah,
boys.
Let's just briefly, what's upcoming? We've got Mini WebCon comes up on the 11th, which is a week from Monday, right?
Yeah, and that, I got to tell you, if you haven't been to a Mini WebCon, it is a fabulous event. Good speakers, good content. Yep. It's really, really well done.
I just had lunch with the organizer, Christopher Leon, yesterday, and he's expecting there'll be a big rush towards, you know, the last week or so here, but he thinks it could get up to be near 300, you know, 250 to 300 people, which is excellent. And it's a good conference. It's
well,
fourth
and then,
year now.
Well, and then to have, was it last year or the year before, Bruce Schneier talk on security, and Doc Searles was in. Wrote the Kloop Train Manifesto as the first kickstart to the transparent web.
The very next day, if you want to make the trip to St. Cloud, Steve, mini demo first
yep.
out of the city's mini demo is happening in St. Cloud, and our friends over.
I'm going.
Are you good? Good
yeah,
for
I
you,
am
man.
Too.
I'm going, and I'm going to spend the day and probably the night too, because I don't think I want to be driving home after, you know, an 11 o'clock end or whatever it is.
Yeah, and, you know, I know you party it up at mini demos. I see you.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, beer is involved, so, you know.
Yeah.
The following day on the 13th, our friends over at Mojo Minnesota are doing the Mojo Mixer, which is what they're terming is speed dating for entrepreneurs.
Yep.
So that'll be fun.
That'll be a good one.
And then the MHTA Spring Conference, the first under the new head of the MHTA.
That's right.
Hey, and on the 13th, the MEMA social, unfortunately, overlapped.
Oh, it's at the Fine Line, isn't it?
No, that's Monday's event.
That's Monday?
Fine Line, yeah.
Okay.
Which Fine Line event?
The CatFoa event they do.
Oh, that one, yeah.
Yeah,
well, on the 13th, they're doing, I think, also at the Fine Line. I'm not sure about the venue, but the Spring Social is Wednesday the 13th from, you know, like, I don't know, 5 to 7 or whatever.
Okay.
Well, here's one of the things I just wanted to mention about these upcoming events. What's really interesting is there aren't a lot of them that are geared toward content and driving new content. So when I think about this whole journalism thing that we talked about, you know, where are the design-oriented sessions? Where, you know, there used to be 55,000 people in printing and publishing in the state of Minnesota, and there's now less than half that number left. And all of these graphic artists and all these designers, where do they go? I mean, there just don't seem to be a lot of conferences and so forth. iPad publishing things, they're just non-existent.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mini WebCon is definitely the closest to that.
And
there will be a lot of content people at that too, I think. I mean, it tilts towards design and UI, but I think there'll be a good share of content and marketing kinds of folks there as well.
But, you know, just a word to fellow organizers. Spread this stuff out a little bit, will you?
Yeah,
it's a big week.
It's like 11, 12, 13, and 14.
There's
something
going
on.
Depends on what you got going on.
Yeah, I suppose.
Hey, thanks, gentlemen.
You bet.
All right.
Have a good week.
Have a good show.
It was a good one.
Take care.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on the Minivate Gang podcast.